Good evening, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the West March Workshop. We're hitting it up with episode 163, season 17 on the horizon. As I promised on the last episode, we'd be going through and taking a bit of a deeper look into season 17 and everything that's going to be coming in the new patch, since we weren't able to cover it. The PTR was like in between episodes, so we didn't have really that much of a chance for like two big hot takes. But now that everything is kind of wrapped up and over with, we can go and kind of jump in and see, you know, some of my favorite changes, some of the other bigger changes that are going to be coming along the way, and see where we're going to be at for the next couple of months within the realm of Diablo. And of course, you know, I guess like the big thing is that we know that season 16 will be ending May 12th, but we don't yet have a start date for season 17 itself. If it, you know, just kind of carries on the tradition of past seasons, it's more than likely going to be within a week of that season 16 end date. So that's going to be putting it more than likely Friday the 17th or Friday the 24th, or kind of like the two, I would say, that the most likely slots for the actual start date of season 17. And then the, you know, one of those Tuesdays or Wednesdays, somewhere in between there, that we will see the actual patch that will go through and give us all of the updates before the season goes live. So you can, you know, maybe test a couple things if you miss the PTR in order to try and figure out what you might want to do in terms of class for that season. You know, or if you just want to play non-season and try out some of the new builds with the a lot of the new items that are changing a couple things up a little bit here and there. But the big thing for season 17, of course, is going to be the new seasonal theme, which this is going to be, I guess, it's the Season of Torment. And that is, everyone is going to get a free Legacy of Nightmares buff. So if you're a class that can take good advantage of the Legacy of Nightmares set, you're now gaining yourself two free ring slots, which is a little bit more than what we had with season 16, which was just the Ring of Royal Grandeur. That either gave you a free ring slot if you already used it in your build, or was giving you an additional armor piece that you could go through and slot around. But the rings, you generally, for most classes, rings are some of the most powerful set pieces, or not set pieces, but skill multipliers. Things such as like the Necromancer, Witch Doctor come to mind, of ones that have huge benefits from being able to equip a lot of their particular class rings or abilities. And that's going to see some big changes that might actually propel some of those nightmare sets up a little bit higher than what the sets will be performing within that particular season while they have that buff. Before we get into the class changes, just some like little quality of life things. They are going through and making additional stash spaces, which I'll talk about a little bit later, because they are going to be locked behind seasons again, but there's reasons why they have it still locked behind seasons. They're not just adding it up front for everyone to go through and take advantage of. We also have some little bit of update to the puzzle ring. So now if you use an ancient or a primal puzzle ring, you'll get a better version of Greed's Realm. So just going to have even, even more drops that will go through and take place in there. More money, better. I don't remember off the top of my head, I didn't get to experience it myself on the PTR, but I don't know if it actually will spawn more lesser goblins. I don't know if there's anyone in chat that will be able to answer that one while I am blindly talking here. But it is supposed to be just like a better version of Greed's Realm. So that way you feel as if you're getting a bit more rewarded for throwing, a rarer puzzle ring, into the cube. And then also, speaking of Greed's Realm, when you're out in the field just killing regular goblins, they now will have a chance of spawning a portal to the Moo Moo Farm. So you'll be able to go through and do the cow level occasionally instead of just going through and doing Greed's Realm. Which, you know, depending upon what how far you are into the season, you know, an actual, you know, a vault run isn't going to be all that big. You know, you don't really need the gold so much anymore. Maybe the gems themselves are also largely not useful, and you're just hoping for a gelatinous sire to maybe get some Death's Breaths out of it, and that's pretty much it. You know, at least, you know, if you have that chance of going through and getting the cow level, you always have two pools of reflection for the extra XP, which is, you know, just always universally helpful no matter where you are within the season itself. Then, of course, they're adding, in addition to those additional stash tabs, in addition to the addition, you will also be having the chance of winning a new set of wings if you complete Guardian. And this is one of the first times beforehand, you know, Guardian always had just that highest tier of the portrait unlock. But this is one of those first times you can actually get a big reward that you can go through and really show off that, hey, look, you know, I completed Guardian in season 17. I got these awesome galactic wings. Sorry for the Bobo picture and the low quality. If I managed to go through and capture a video, it'd be much nicer because all the stars and the kind of like the nebula that you see in those wings there, they kind of the background itself doesn't move, but when the wings do, it kind of shifts. It has this really awesome effect. I think Bloodshed has a really nice video out there if you want to go through and take a look at that. That shows off those wings in action. They are absolutely beautiful, just absolutely marvelous. And you know, it's a nice kind of like end cap to the season to show that you put all the time and effort into going through and unlocking Guardian. No one goes through and looks at portrait frames besides you, same as like your banner. But this is something that everyone is going to be able to just instantly look at when you join the game and say like, oh, okay, that guy went through and completed Guardian. And then on top of that, what I was mentioning beforehand with the stash tabs, we are going to have the chance to go through and unlock another set of stash tabs that they're going through and increasing, but they are locking it all behind having to go through and complete you know, the seasonal journey again. And the reasoning that they have for that is that Nevelis just went through and made a post on the forums a couple of days ago, is that it largely comes down to performance issues, and that just going through and giving all of those stash tabs to everyone from the get-go is going to cause server problems. It's technical limitations that's kind of going through and preventing them from doing that. But kind of having a time gate behind seasons is going to give them the time necessary to hopefully go through and address those issues on the back end to allow us, you know, to go through and have more stash space. And on top of that, they're also adding in, you know, like the ability. What was I going at? No. Yeah. So you're gonna go through and have, you know, all those. All those lovely new stash tabs that you can go unlock, have lots of fun with, and just be even more of a hoarder than what you normally were. There, of course, is some interesting changes. There's not as many balance changes as there were with Season 16 in this particular patch, but there are some pretty interesting additions that they went through and made to a lot of the supplementary items for the classes. And it's one of those that they're it's kind of hit or miss. They're trying to make some more different styles of play for all of the classes be available. Not all of them are going to be the new top build within their prospective classes that will, you know, allow you to go through and have this, but they're hitting the mark pretty close and making a lot of these at least like effective alternatives. Maybe for not going and trying to push like your solo Greater Rift 130 or 125, but something to go and mess around with at the higher end, you know, whether it's solo pushes or a couple of them, maybe also some just like lower end group play. You know, one of the big ones was the Akan's Leniency that was going through and buffing the Captain America build. It started off with just a 15 to 20% buff was later buffed to 75 to 100, then brought back down to 30 to 35. And I believe it kind of gave like a rubber band effect somewhere between like the Greater Rift 125 and I think it was 137 or 139 that was cleared on the PTR itself. If we go back and we look at Season 16, we know that they had made some additional changes between the close of the PTR in the actual implementation of the patch. So that might not still be the final number, and that could be one of those ones that is definitely up there in terms of competing for like the solo Crusader leaderboards. And that's something that has a lot of people excited. Huge, you know, we were just talking about like the anniversary of Reaper of Souls. The Captain America builds were pretty big, you know, back in the early days of Reaper. Kind of fell off from there due to, you know, like Holy Shotgun and other such builds. It's cool to go through and see it back, especially with it being like the legacy of Nightmare Season. To have some of that usefulness and being able to have the high-end pushing with it. One of the other big ones was the Carnival is now doubling the number of fetishes that you can that will actually go through and shoot your poison darts. This one, for a lot of the PTR, was broken. It wasn't giving the Carnival bonus damage to the fetishes, so it wasn't really playable. Once they went through and got it buffed with that 10, I know Big Daddy Din, you know, obviously if you've never heard of him, he is like the one of the big go-to resources for anything involving Witch Doctor and Diablo 3. He did a lot of extensive testing on it. It was pretty good. Not one of the best, but definitely was up there in terms of its capabilities. It was just something for you to be able to go and play around with if it's something that interests you. One of the ones that I talked a little bit about on the last episode that I'm really interested in is the buff that they're doing to the Bloodtide Blade, that they're buffing the increased damage to Death Nova from that item, you know, every time you go through and use it. And that was that is one that I'm really looking forward to going through and testing out, because they also fixed a bug that was preventing Simulacrum from benefiting from Trag'ul's 6-piece set bonus. So that way, if you were, say, using Simulacrum, it would copy your skills but wasn't getting the damage bonus from it. Now it is, so that way you can go and use, you know, the Blood Nova and have, like, triple Blood Novas going through, popping around everywhere, the Bloodtide Blade going through and buffing it. Probably not going to be anywhere on the top end on that one, but will more than likely at least just be something fun, you know, to go and play around with, that I'm pretty excited for. Of course, there's also like one of the sets that did get changed was the Grace of Inarius. They're upping the 6-piece set bonus, you know, from the 3750 to 10,000% increased damage. So that way, at least, is going to be a little bit more competitive with Legacy of Nightmares, because it's just kind of being you know, dropped to the wayside in terms of just its overall capabilities. It's still going to be, I think, you know, not one of the bigger pushing builds, maybe necessarily. It I haven't seen the numbers. SVR would probably be able to go through and pick this one out, you know, a little bit better as far as where it would sit within like the realm of Rift Guardian Killers, you know. But it still is going to have some massive, you know, massive gains for like the Lazy Mancer build going through and coming back, for just going and pushing, you know, regular rifts instead of greater rifts, or just if you want to go through and do some slightly lower greater rifts, leveling up legendary gems. That's going to be a nice little fun go-to build on that one. They've got then one of the other interesting ones that they're going through and trying to make work is the they made a couple of buffs to the Wojani Assaulter and Sin Seekers, so that way it has Sin Seekers now gives a damage bonus to rapid fire, and the Wojani Assaulter has that already made it so that way it gained stacks of increased damage for rapid fire. The damage bonus is increased higher, and it now will stack instead of 4 times to 30 times. And that sounds really interesting. Can they make like kind of like one of those channeling builds work? I think Leviathan was going through and doing some testing on this one, and one of the issues that he kind of had was just the stack drop off. That it was that was pretty painful, and going through and having to go through a move, especially when you're trying to both for like regular greater rifts and solo greater rifts, where you might be moving a lot, not necessarily going through and standing still so much. But it could be fun and interesting to see how that goes through and tests out. Apparently, it seems that Nevelistus did make a post on the forums about the Captain America build, that it overall will be a little bit higher. The damage bonus is going to be a little bit higher, though not as high as the 75 to 100% bonus damage, but it definitely is going to be above the 30 to 35 once it hits live. But no specific numbers on that one. I will be interested in seeing if they can make one of the channeling build work for rapid fire. But that also does, kind of tie into another post that Nevelistus had made, or had replied to, I should say. A few days ago, there was a post that appeared on the official forums that was going through and saying that they loved the buff to rapid fire. This is completely regardless of whether it's going to be like one of the top builds or anything like that, but they absolutely enjoyed the fact that they now have a potentially, viable quotation marks rapid fire build. By viable, like I mean anything that can really clear, over Greater Rift 80. If you can clear Greater Rift 100, that's going to be amazing for the vast majority of people that are going through and playing Diablo 3. Not everyone is going through and trying to hit, those 120 pluses for solo, or going to go through and try and hit the 150s, in the 4-man groups, or apparently the 150 in 3-man groups now. But within the post, Nevelist just went through and said that, of course, that even though they're unlikely to make any additional changes at this point between what was on between the PTR and what's going to be live, she is asking for feedback on what are builds that you would like to see more support for? What are things that you would like to see Blizzard go and make changes? In future patches, future seasons, what is there a particular build that you would like to play? I've mentioned this a couple of times this year now, is the Fist of the Heavens build for Crusaders. How it just has like a couple of like little minor buffing items, but it's not really anything that can be taken all that high. Imagine if they actually made like a viable Fist of the Heavens build for Crusader that you could push like a 110 with, or something along those lines. That would be, I would be rolling a Crusader that season, just to go through and try that out, because that was always a fun skill. Like, because that's something that, at least for me, harkens back to the Diablo 2 Paladin. Just the Fist of the Heavens. It wasn't exactly like game breaking or anything like that, but it is something that just has that iconic feel to it. That was one of those like kind of like the big paladin skills in D2, and when they made it for the Crusader, it's like, oh, this is awesome. And it wasn't it kind of as they continued to develop and push the sets as the preferred style of playing, it was one that just kind of got dropped on the wayside. They tried giving it a couple of buffs. I think it was should have put this in the show notes, but it was about like two, I want to say it was like 2 years ago, maybe even 3 years ago. It's been a while, that they gave a just like a couple little buffs for it. But if they went back in and addressed those items to make it better, I would love that. So I should probably go and comment on the forums that I want to see a Fist of the Heaven, Crusader build that goes through and is made viable. But that's definitely one of those ones where just, if there's something that's not in the game now that you would like to go through and play, head over, go through, give that post a comment. Despite what the trolls might say, let's just call them trolls, that Blizzard does actually go through and read their own forums, and they do take feedback seriously. Obviously, they can't go through and, put in and implement everything that's ever said, but it is one of those ones that is gonna at least get some traction if there's a lot of people that are going through and saying, we want this. And they definitely have had a lot of Crusaders wanting a Fist of the Heavens build, and that makes me slightly excited. Just throwing that one out there. Yeah. That's just some of those things to go through and keep an eye on for Season 17. Which, of course, sometime between now and our next episode, which is should be like the 15th-ish, Season 16 will end. I will imagine that we'll have the start date for Season 17 by then, and we'll maybe even have patch notes and be able to go through and say specifically how much all of these numbers have been buffed and changed, and go through and take a greater look into detail at that point. Especially as, you know, a lot of the content creators out there are still going through and formulating their feedback, you know, looking over their notes, you know, making sure that they covered all their bases and putting out, like, their guide videos of, like, their particular, you know, like, favorite classes or things that they found from the PTR. Take a look at, you know, some of those things that you might be able to start off with the seasons, you know, with the Hadrix builds and such to go through and give you a boost. As far as other news, there was a recent post over on the Diablo Immortal subreddit. I know, Diablo Immortal. You can if you're not a fan of the game, you could tune out, you know, at least for a couple minutes. But it was apparently a Q&A that was done by Pamela Horton on her stream at BlizzCon that I guess was just never archived or taken down, got reposted over on the Diablo Immortal subreddit, and it was with Caleb, who was at the time one of the senior producers on the team, but has subsequently been promoted to lead producer for the Diablo Immortal project. Just going through, sitting down, and casually answering some questions. The QA section's about 30 minutes or so. Not really anything in particular new that we haven't heard before from other interviews, you know, at BlizzCon itself. The biggest takeaway that I had from it is, you know, when the question was asked, you know, when can we expect this game? His answer was really energetic, and he was going through and saying, oh, it's going to be soon. And then he had to kind of retract that and walk back. It's like, oh, well, I mean, Blizzard soon. And so that's that makes me wonder, like, where all in all kind of like that peg date for when Immortal is going to get pushed, when we're going to go and see more of it. Blizzard, of course, has been pretty tight-lipped as far as any information since BlizzCon itself. There hasn't been really much of anything. Besides more addressing the community's reaction to the announcement than actually talking about the game itself. But I have a theory on that one. I believe I've said it a couple of times in the episode before, that if you just look at any social media posting that Diablo puts out there, not even Immortal, just anything involving Diablo, like the first five comments are phone jokes. They I imagine, are going to realize this, and so they're just kind of like keeping a low profile, not addressing it, because if they go to talk anything about Immortal, probably some of the top questions is going to be, you know, well, what's the monetization system? And they're just going to not really push too much out there until they can answer some of those harder questions, instead of pushing it off, because then you're just inviting the trolls out even more. But, you know, the Caleb's reaction about it being soon makes me wonder, is it something that might potentially be kind of like a summer release? Is it something that we'll get before BlizzCon, which we can now talk about BlizzCon in a little bit, you know, where that peg is going to be? Just because, you know, at BlizzCon itself, Immortal itself was polished, but didn't have too much to show, as if it was still relatively early in development. Then we got hit, you know, with NetEase saying that they were done with their side of development for the game, and that everything now is going through and is in Blizzard's court. Where are we in terms of that game release? because I know a lot of people are, still kind of vitriolic about anything and any discussion involving Diablo Immortal. But if it is a game that you are interested in, I heavily suggest that you go through and check out that Diablo Immortal subreddit, because it's mostly positive and constructive discussions. There's not really too much. It's more like kind of like fan theorizing and expectations, and probably the post every other day about when are we going to learn more about this game. But it is at least a nice place that you can find some like-minded individuals to go through and discuss positively about the game instead of everything being a phone joke. And now I expect a phone joke on this episode, like a couple episodes ago when I was last talking about Diablo Immortal. Before we go through and start talking about BlizzCon, there is one, I guess, kind of like a little bit of a sad note. Just yesterday, Blizzard made an official announcement that they are not going to have a presence at Gamescom, which, Diablo at least has a special relationship with Gamescom, because that was where Reaper of Souls was announced. And so it's one of those things that, Blizzard has actually used Gamescom as an avenue to make some of their really major announcements when they have kind of like a stacked year for BlizzCon. Whether it is, like the Reaper of Souls announcement, the Legion announcement, they've had some pretty big panels there. And the fact that this year they have no presence at all is kind of surprising. But I guess that does mean there's more reason to possibly be excited about BlizzCon. This is one of those ones where it's just like, that means that whatever it is that they have to announce, it's kind of putting more and more towards BlizzCon itself. Just because there's not a lot else that Blizzard has too big of a presence that they've made these big announcements at for these conventions. They, arguably have a very minimal presence at E3. I think that they skipped E3 for a good number of years. The only reason why they were back was they had like a minimal booth just for their console titles, Overwatch and Diablo 3, if I remember correctly, but that's about it. Now, I've seen a lot of people like give their hot take on Twitter that this is all, this is Activision interference, that it's all, just looking out for the profits and the bottom line. I don't really buy that one so much, just because like Activision is still going to have a presence, at Gamescom. Activision has a huge presence at E3 that Blizzard has largely skipped, for, I believe, over a decade. And so there's just those things that it's like that Activision itself realizes that these big conventions or trade shows are really great marketing tools, and that it's worth the investment into them. So I don't think that it's something like that like Activision's going through and actively cutting it in order to like cut costs, because this is going to go into your marketing budget, going through building hype. And I would say that it's had largely a positive impact as far as kind of like the uptick, and we don't know what the actual metrics are, but even when they've had not really all that much to announce besides like a map or something along those lines for Overwatch, that it's largely gotten a lot of traction within the community itself. That's something for the community to be excited about, because they have this big presence at a big convention or trade show. One of the other theories that are out there, I guess I'm a little bit more willing to buy because of all of the terminations that happen, that maybe they let go too many people for their events team, and that they really didn't have enough staffing in order to fully put together a game plan for Gamescom 2019. I would think that a company of Blizzard's size, that they would take that into consideration, and that probably isn't, again, the reason for it. Is that what they said in the press release is that they're continuing to focus on the development of all of their titles going through 2019. And so they just made the decision to cut their presence there to refocus on the game's development. And that one, of course, is really true, because for any of these things, if they have an announcement, their developers are there. They don't just have PR guys that are going through and, you know, getting up on stage and talking about, you know, these like new titles or new developments within their games. It's the actual, like, the developers, team leads, the game directors and such that are going through and saying this. And that there's a, besides that, it's like a week-long convention, travel time, rehearsals, prep and such, that's going to take a bit away, you know, from that. And if it's something that they are, like, maybe say gearing up towards having a big unveiling at BlizzCon itself, or that extra couple weeks of development time that they might have might be the difference between having a playable demo at BlizzCon and not, I can see them pulling the trigger on that one as far as going through and skipping it. And just while we're on the topic of BlizzCon, continuing to go through and segue into that one, we finally have the BlizzCon announcement for 2019. There were some people that were doubting whether it was going to happen this year or not. I was pretty certain that it was going to happen just for the fact that we would have heard by now if they were skipping it this year, you know. But a couple days ago, they finally went through and they announced it. It's going to be November 1st and the 2nd. Which was, you know, that mystery blackout date that I talked about a couple episodes ago, within the Anaheim Convention Center's own schedule. Oh no, who would have thought? And you'll have your chance to go through and buy tickets. It's a pretty quick turnaround between announcement and ticket sales. It's going to be Saturday, May 4th and Wednesday, May 8th. So they're flipping it around. Normally the first set would be on the weekday with the second set on the weekend. And now it's going to be putting the weekend set on sale first. It just so happens that it's this particular setup that I'll be working that Saturday, and then there's a special event, so I'll be working that Wednesday night too. So I'm stressing just a little tiny bit just to make sure that I go through and get tickets for this year. They're also going through and doing it a little bit differently. No longer are you going to be going through and flexing your F5 muscle. That with the AXS ticket seller, which is the processor that they use for the Blizzard Arena, it actually, they'll open up a waiting room 30 minutes prior to the sale time for the tickets. And then they randomly pull from everyone in the waiting room. It's not like kind of like a first come first serve, and then you'll have a brief amount of time to go and actually push through your ticket purchases. Also, with using AXS, something a little bit different is that you will have to have the AXS app to pick up your tickets at the convention. No longer can you just print out the barcode. The ticket will get loaded into the app, and you just will show that in order to pick up your badge. Not a goodie bag, but you know, they're doing something a little bit different this year instead of a goodie bag. They do have some consideration in case there's problems with the app or you don't have a smartphone or anything like that in order to go and still pick up your tickets in some way. But one of the advantages that they're saying for this purchase system is that the way that it handles splitting tickets. And so that way, when you say, if you're buying for a group of people and you go through and send them their tickets, it's no longer tied into your account with their name on it. You literally send them the ticket within the system. They go through, log into their ASX or AXS system, and then their ticket is physically there. It is no longer yours. You no longer have to worry anything about it. They can then go and give it to someone else if they so choose. And so it's a little bit less of a hassle and coordination, you know, for if there's a, say, big groups that are going through and trying to coordinate and, you know, get those done, where you can just have them get all the tickets, send them all over here. You know, you got yours. That's it. You're in charge of your own destiny now. I don't have to worry about it any longer. I'm sure Dread is 110% loving that change, because he's always been one of those ones that's been kind of like the central repository for tickets, like within our group, having to coordinate. Do I got everybody's names and all the tickets? Is all this set? Is all this good? For those people that normally were coordinating that stuff, I'm sure it's going to be a little bit easier on them. And then also, while I'm on the topic of the tickets, I didn't mention the time. So for Saturday, May 4th, the ticket is going to go on sale at 10 a.m. Pacific daylight time. And then May 8th, the ticket is going to go on sale at 7 p.m. Pacific daylight time. So, you know, coordinate that with your local time zone in order to see when the tickets are going to go on sale. They are adding something new this year with a premium pass. That they're calling the BlizzCon Portal Pass. This one is going to be more expensive, but you are getting a lot of special perks included with this. You have the Night at the Fair, which is going to be a special event that happens on Thursday between 4 p.m. and 8 p.m. at the Convention Center, where you get to go through and kind of explore the Dark Moon Fair a whole day early. You'll have a special lounge dedicated just for Portal Pass ticket holders, where you'll will have kind of like a concierge service. You'll have charging stations for, you know, phones, game systems. There's a concierge service that will be able to answer any of your questions, you know, involving BlizzCon or panels or anything. And there'll also kind of be dedicated times that they'll have. They'll always make sure that there's special guests as well as Blizzard employees available to chat to while you're in this lounge. It'll be like a complimentary of snacks. I'm not sure the level of food that you're going to get, if you're going to get full-on meals, because it'll also have its own concessions area that you can purchase food at within there. Also, probably one of the biggest draws for this is that you'll get early access to the convention center, so you'll actually be able to enter the convention center before the general attendance or the general attendees, as well as being able to have a expedited security line, which just not necessarily Blizzard's fault, but security has gotten tighter and tighter every year at BlizzCon, which also means longer and longer lines and checks in order to get into the convention center itself. So just the fact that you can go in, get in early, get your seat right there, you know, close to the main stage or the Hearthstone stage or whichever stage that you were hoping to get a seat for whatever announcement that's bringing you in particular to the convention center. We'll definitely be hoping that there is a Diablo stage of some sort where that we can park ourselves in front of to get the first look, or the closest look, I should say, at any announcements that are going through and being made there. And so, you know, with that, the tickets themselves have gone up in price by a little bit. The regular ticket is... I just had this open. Where did it go? Okay, so the BlizzCon pass itself is going to be, has, you know, just, you know, this is something standard for conventions. The regular BlizzCon ticket price has increased to $229. Any type of convention is going to have that, especially that this year they're moving ticket pickup off-site. It's not at a convention center, and that Hall E is going to be used as a whole additional area for the convention. I imagine that means that they're also, like, last year was the largest BlizzCon before, with I believe over 40,000 attendees. With the additional con space, I bet that number is going to go even higher this year. And then the Portal Pass, that premium pass package, is going to be $550 each for those tickets. So, you know, if you're looking to go through and make it an experience, that might be worth it for you. Like, honestly, the ticket price is one of the smaller barriers of entry when you factor in food, hotel, and travel. That doesn't really make too much of a large increase in terms of the ticket price. I wouldn't be put off too much by that $500 ticket price. Like, just because go through and look what a, you know, like a week's worth of hotel in the flight is going to be. And it's not gonna factor in, you know, all too much. And of course, I mentioned that there was not going to be a goodie bag this year, but instead they've got a set of statues that when you purchase the tickets, you will have to opt for what statue that you're getting. Because they're only printing a small number of these, and they're going to guarantee the orders for, you know, everyone that's buying a ticket. They will have some, I believe they will have some available for purchase at the convention itself, and the people that will later be able to buy the virtual tickets and such. But this is, you know, for the anniversary, I believe it's the 25th anniversary of Warcraft. And so they are giving away the Human Footman and the Orc Grunt statues. And, you know, that is taking the place of the goodie bag. There's still going to be, like, the in-game goodies and such that you'll be able to get with the purchase of the BlizzCon ticket or the virtual pass. But, you know, the BlizzCon goodie bags, they've always kind of been, like, hit or miss, you know, here or there. You know, you get a free bag, like, some badges, some patches. And, you know, if you're into that thing, awesome. If you're not, it's kind of like, eh. But this is something that is just going to be awesome, being able to get, like, one of these statues. If you're a Warcraft fan, if not, well, you know, good luck, you know, on your eBay selling. We'll be interested in seeing how much those things go for. A lot of those, like, really limited ones, like the Mini Tyrael or the Little Deathwing, I know that those used to fetch some pretty fair prices, you know, on eBay for those that really didn't care and just wanted to kind of recoup some of their costs, their BlizzCon ticket on that one. So this is definitely a pretty big upgrade in terms of, you know, what we had last year, with just, you know, some badges and patches. You know, I'll take the statue any day of the week. I do hope that one day we'll get another, like, Diablo statue or something along those lines. Which I guess is one minor footnote, is that I had been hoping, because they had been holding off on the April Blizzard Gallery portrait, the print, the special limited edition print. Hoping that maybe this would be the month that we get our Diablo print. It ended up being, you know, Hearthstone again, you know, to commemorate the launch of the Rise of the Shadows expansion that came out last month. What is it? I don't know the actual terms of release date. I haven't really been keeping up on World of Warcraft news, but I believe May is probably going to end up being, like, you know, something along the lines of 8.2, so I would not be surprised to see the Blizzard Gallery for May be something involving Azshara. So that means maybe June. Maybe June will be the month that we finally get our Diablo limited edition print. Or, who knows, maybe it will be BlizzCon, the November print, when they announce Diablo 4, the Burning Hell's Willing, that will actually have our chance to go through and get that. I'm a collector. I know a lot of the people, if you're listening, if you're dedicated to the franchise enough to be listening to this podcast, you're more than likely a collector as well. You just want to show your love, you know, for this franchise that you love, you know, hopefully as much as I do, or maybe more. But yeah, it's gonna be interesting, kind of like what we have between now and then. The reason why I'm putting so much focus on BlizzCon is just want to kind of, like, go back to some of the comments from December that Blizzard had made, is that they had talked about that they have the multiple Diablo projects that are in the works, and that they're going to, you know, reveal them to us throughout the year. There was no announcements at PAX East. They've pulled out of Gamescom. Now, besides, of course, going through and doing, like, a press release or some sort of press event on their own outside of one of these big conventions, that pretty much puts all eyes on BlizzCon for, you know, any type of big announcement that they might have. If they do a remaster, I wouldn't be too surprised if they announce that separately at just some point before BlizzCon. But If they're having some sort of like spin-off game, like a console Dark Souls title or Diablo 4, they're gonna save that one for BlizzCon. We'll have more to go through and see at that point that we can hope. And despite holding on to hope that they will announce Diablo 4 at BlizzCon, I do want to say that even if they announced it then, I would not expect the game in 2020. I would still give it some time between announcement and release, just because there is a lot of pressure, on Blizzard to deliver on this one from the community. All the expectations, like when Diablo 3 released, there really wasn't any competition. Now you've got Grim Dawn, you've got Path of Exile, and the amount of content that Path of Exile has been putting out. Not just over the time since its release, but even just like within the last year is like impressive. It's mind-blowing. And these are the types of things that they're going through and putting out. And they've already GGG has already gone through and commented that some of the new leagues that they've had have been stuff that they've been kind of working on in order to counteract like that Diablo 4 announcement in their next huge patch. Kind of like mini expansion type patch is this was developed specifically to be competition to Diablo 4. So there's a lot out there that now is going to put even more pressure on Blizzard, not just from the community's expectations, but what else is out there in the field. You're also going to have Woolson, you have Last Epoch, you've got a lot of other up and coming, ARPGs that are all going to be fighting for that market space and are going to be giving people alternatives. And so Blizzard will have to make sure that they earn their spot as they continue to be the king of the ARPG genre. And that's going to wrap up my thoughts. So I'm gonna throw the question, over to you. Like, what are your expectations, for BlizzCon? What are your feelings on the fact that they aren't having a presence at Gamescom for this year? What are some of the things that you're looking forward to in season 17? What are some of the builds that you would like to see them do for season 18 or 19? What are your ideas? And as always, feel free to go through, drop a line, show off your epic loot. Send the comments, feedback, or suggestions for the show. Our email address is westmarchworkshop@blizzpro.com. And again, that email address is westmarchworkshop@blizzpro.com. You can also follow the show or tweet at me at the WM Workshop, or my own personal Twitter account, which is @9ballgamer. You can catch the show here, stream every other Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific at twitch.tv/blizzpro. If you like the show, feel free to go ahead and hit that follow button and turn on notifications for when the show itself goes live. If you want to support not just the show, but the BlizzPro network in general, you can always go through and subscribe. That helps offset the hosting costs for the podcast as well as our website, because you can find all the Diablo news that you need over at diablo.blizzpro.com. Main man Dreadscythe goes through and has a lockdown on that. I post some things occasionally from time to time, every couple of months, on there as well, to get some of my thoughts and things that are going on within the community. If you want to, you can find us. We're in-game, we're the BlizzPro clan. Tons of open spaces at the moment as we go through and are preparing for the end of Season 16 and the beginning of Season 17. If you don't want to leave your current clan, you can always join the in-game community, the Westmarch Workshop. And of course, we have our Discord server, discord.gg/blizzpro. And again, if you do want to follow me individually, you can always follow me on Twitter @9ballgamer, in the account that I never stream on, twitch.tv/9ball. And with that will go through and bring me to a close. And I thank you all for going through and joining me on tonight's episode, and look forward to seeing you again on May 15th, which just so happens to be Diablo's anniversary. I should say Diablo 3's anniversary.